Well, I know everybody is wondering, Teresa, just how it was that you came to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and maybe you'd like to tell us a little bit about the background and, you know.
Long story.
Well, let them tell us. Do you want to stay and hear the story?
Well, in 1973, I was running crazy and doing all kinds of shows and everything. And my cousin, her name is Peggy Wilson, I had learned that had become one of Jehovah's Witnesses. I really didn't know too much about Jehovah's Witnesses, only that they had the Watchtower anyway, which I had read, I think, about 10 years before. I was shocked to learn that Peggy had got religion, was what I said. And I thought for sure it has to be a farce, because she's, you know, she can't be doing good things. And I decided that I was going to watch her. And I knew I'd catch her at something, you see. Because I had looked into so many different things. I've always had this desire to, you know, to worship, do something. And I tried to go to all kinds of different churches. And I was so disgusted and so disappointed that I just said, well, you know, I'll just worship God in my own way and try to be good. Peggy kept encouraging me and everything, and I watched her, and she never did anything, you know, out of the way. And she really, we hadn't really liked each other too much before. And all of a sudden, she's been so nice to me. I thought, I know something's ulterior motive. But she was sincerely concerned about me. And we used to meet at my mom's house all the time, a lot of the kids, and we always have discussions about things. And one day we were over there talking about, you know, different subjects, and Peggy was there, and she'd always whip out her little Bible. You know, we'd all go, oh. She'd always ask, you always carry that Bible? And she goes, yeah, you never know. And she'd always come up with the answers. We'd be discussing and debating back and forth, and Peggy, you know, she'd come out, bang, there's the answer, and we'd all look at her. And she was so confident, she told me later she was scared to death, but she was wielding that sword away. And I was very impressed. I just sat back and listened to her, and I was really impressed with her knowledge of the scriptures, and I wanted to learn some myself. I didn't tell her that. But she kept encouraging me to study the Bible and says, oh, I don't have time. I got to do this. I got to do that. So she says, well, now, listen, let me make you a proposition. I thought, you're not supposed to do that. She says, no, that's just theoretical. She says, if you received in the mail $168 a week from an unknown benefactor, no obligation, clear, legal, one stipulation, all you had to do was send $1 back to the benefactor, would you take it? I said, sure. 167, I'll send him one back. Sure. She says, good. Jehovah God gives you 168 hours of life each week. Can't you give him one back? So I start a Bible study. So I set aside 1 hour a week to study the Bible late Saturday afternoon, because I go out, you know, I was going out on Friday night. She'd come all the way out to Hollywood. No matter where I was, she'd track me down. Boy, she drove so much to find me. And it wasn't that I was trying to avoid her, but I was really busy and, you know, didn't have time and in show business and trying to be a star and all that. But she kept on with me and just as kind. And once I sat down, though, I'd study for 2 and 3 hours because I loved it. And I was just so excited about everything I was learning. I was like a little gopher. I was just digging and digging in there. I wanted to know everything all at once. And I'd ask her things. She'd only been baptized a year, and she couldn't, you know, she didn't know. So she gave me this big blue book called the Aid Book and said, here, read it. So I started reading that, and it was really exciting. And so she says, I says, well, I'm going to read the Bible. So I went home in about 36 hours or so. I just read straight through, read the whole Bible. I came back and I said, I still don't understand. She said, that's why you have to study. So I said, okay. So I started studying. I was doing fine. And all of a sudden, from nowhere, I get this marvelous offer to go to London to do a movie with David Niven called Dracula. So I said, I'm going to London. I'll see you later. Peggy said, wait a minute. Let's talk about it. She said, take your books with you. No matter what you do, keep your study going. She says, we're all over the world. All you have to do is look in the phone book and call someone up, tell them where you are, and they'll come and pick right up with chapter 5. So I says, okay, fine. She didn't tell me then it was Satan getting me out of... He didn't get me out of the state. He got me out of the country. And I went to London. I took all these books. It was extra money and everything. I didn't know why I took all these books, this aid book and all that, but I took them. And when I got there, I looked in the phone book, and there's this place called Bethel. So I called up, forgot it was Sunday. Nobody was there. Monday morning, first thing I called, and I said, "Hello, may I speak to Bethel or Ethel?" So the brother was very kind, and I told him, I explained to him that I was an American. I would be over here doing a movie for about 2 months, and I'd just begun a study in the States, and I wanted to continue on, and my cousin told me to call, and somebody would come. I'm at the Cadogan Square, and I'm in room so-and-so. I'm on chapter 5. So the brother says, he says, "Very good. I'll have someone around in an hour. I'll have them call you. Will you be there?" I said, "Yeah, I'll be here." So that night, this very lovely lady called named Una Williams. And she calls. She says, "Hello, is Teresa Graves there?" And I said, "Yes, this is she." She says, "The brother called today, and he was so adamant." She says, "You must be so eager, dear." She says, "He never talks to me. He always waits for Robin. But he talked to me. And I'm just so excited." And so I says, "Yeah, I want to study and everything." So she says, "Well, we're having a pre-watchtower study tonight. And here's the address. You jump in a cab, and we'll be there waiting for you." So I says, "Okay, I'll go watch." Watchtower. So I got in a cab, and I came over, and there were young people my age, Robin, her husband, was conducting this thing. Oh, he's so beautiful. You know, I really liked him right away because he's really an excellent teacher. He was a presiding overseer of the congregation, and he's so articulate and very English, very beautiful, and just got every little point and everything. And I just sat on the floor and just, you know, took it all in. I just got so excited again, and they literally adopted me. I mean, they wanted me to move out of the hotel and come into their home, and I'm thinking to myself, these people don't know me. I could be a crook, anything. And they were sincere. And so I said, "Well, I'll just come over." And she insisted, Una insisted that I come and have dinner with them every night. "You can't eat that food," she says. "It'll make you ill, dear." So I did, and I kept going to the studio, and here I am studying, right, the Bible and doing Dracula at the studio. I didn't know. I was only on chapter 5. I hadn't gotten to chapter 7. So I'd come home every night and wash my face and get all scrubbed up and put on my jeans and run over to Robin's. And we'd sit up all night long, and he'd sit up. Everybody'd be going to bed, and we'd be in the aid book. And I wanted to know everything. And we'd dig sometimes till 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was just thirsting and thirsty, like a sponge, just taking it all in. I was writing letters to Peggy, and it was great, and it was exciting and everything. And finally, Una says to me, "We're having an international assembly, dear, and you must come if you can find one day. It's August 1 through 5. And so I says, "Well, we haven't received the schedule for shooting yet, and when we do, if I get one day off, I'll come." I'd never been to an assembly. This was an international assembly. And so 2 weeks later, the schedule came out. And of all the days I had off in 2 months was August 1 through 5. And I thought, wait a minute. I called Una, and I was so excited. I said, "Guess what? It's such a coincidence. Of all the days I had..." And she says, "Yes, dear, I know." She could see the whole thing. So finally she says, "We have a carload, but we're going to send some friends around to get you. Now, be ready at 6:30 a.m. 6:30? It doesn't start until 10 o'clock. She says, "Yes, dear, and we're late already." So there I was, up at 6:30. I couldn't even see. I don't get up till noon. But there I was standing there, and these other friends picked me up, and they were so lovely. And they were so beautiful. There were no policemen there, and there was no dirt on the ground. There was no trash. The children were disciplined and polite. There was no pushing and shoving, no smoking, no cursing, no rudeness. There was no dissension. There was all these different, about 72 nations represented there in beautiful costumes from Africa and Asia and Japan. I said, "Boy, this is beautiful." And I looked all around this stadium, and it was just gorgeous, just beautiful. And I sat, and the program started, and we listened for about half a day. I wasn't used to sitting that long. I kept watching my watch in the program, and it was going to be from 10 to about 5 o'clock. I can't sit that long. I stayed as long as I could till about noon, and I told you and I had to go. I couldn't. And she said, well, we'll take you home. And I said, no, that's okay. You stay, and I'll find my way home. And I don't know how I found. I got on a train. Right away when I left the stadium, there was pushing, and we got to the train station. There was pushing and shoving and cursing and smoking and just what am I doing here? I just left all this beautiful atmosphere, and right away I could, you know, hit me. This is completely different. I got on the train, and as it rode, I was sad I left. And then my conscience, I guess, started whipping me, and I thought, well, you're not making any efforts to go back, though. So I thought, well, Peggy said something to me once. She says, I'm not speculating. It's just, you know, logical to think, Jehovah being very practical God, that when he brings this thing to an end, he's going to have all his people together. So I says, what am I doing on this train? I got home, and I was very mad at myself. I was disappointed at myself, and I thought, well, Jehovah doesn't want me because I couldn't sit like the rest of the people did. And if I were a good person, then I should have been able to sit with everybody else. So I cried, and I tried to pray, and I wrote Peggy a 12-page letter and told her, you know, Jehovah doesn't want me. And so the next day, I stayed home, and I planned to go to Paris and shop. And other things came up, and I didn't want to do anything. I was very sad, and I sat at home, and the whole day I watched my watch, and I watched the program where they were at the assembly. And then I got mad at myself because I didn't make any effort to get there. So I wrote another letter to Peggy. And I called her, and I was sad, and she says, don't worry. She said, keep studying. No matter what happens, just keep studying. So I says, okay, I'll try. And I was determined the third day to go and stay all day long. By the way, I had gone, you know, I dressed the wrong way. The first day I went, I was all decked out and dragging, you know, cloaks on the floor and everybody, all this dirt and dust around and this big old tent. I said, where's the restaurant? She says, we eat over there. It's a big old tent. And this long line and nobody's pushing and shoving. Third day I was determined. I got up and I called Una. She was very happy. And I came and I stayed long enough this time for the drama. Well, here's my field, theater, you know, lights, costume, action. This is great. And after the drama, I thought, boy, this is great. There's only a couple of more talks. I can sit through that. And I stayed the whole day. I was so proud of myself. After the day was over, I was just, I guess I was happier than anyone. People were thinking about getting baptized. I thought, I'm the happiest. I stayed the whole day. They were looking at me, you know. And I went home and wrote Peggy another letter. Called her up and she said, just keep studying. And I went home and wrote her all the things that had gone on. Went down the list and wrote every little thing. I didn't realize she'd already had an assembly in Los Angeles. She already had the program. I didn't know. So I'm writing all these things. She never said, don't write, just keep studying. So about that third day, it started to drizzle a little bit. Now, the fourth day, we were there and everything was beautiful. It started to rain. So, you know, I'm packing up and getting all the stuff ready. And Eunice says, where are you going? I said, well, it's raining out here. Aren't we leaving? She says, no, dear. So I said, but it's raining. We're wet. She says, turn to Ezra, the 10th chapter, verse 9, dear. So all the men of Judah and Benjamin collected themselves together at Jerusalem within 3 days. That is, in the ninth month, on the 20th day of the month. And all the people kept sitting in the open place of the house of the true God, shivering because of the matter and on account of the showers of rain. I put my things down and I got wet with everybody else. Mr. Knorr was supposed to speak. Who's Mr. Knorr? I said. Don't worry, it'll be good, she says. The fourth day, it was torrential rain. It was thundering and everything, and nobody was moving. These people are nuts out here. I was trying to get back under the shelter and everything. I said, Mr. Noor must be important. Nobody's leaving here. Whatever he's got to say must be. So I'm not going anywhere either. By the fifth day, I felt like one of them, you know. Every day I was getting more and more excited and learning more and more. And by the time Brother Noor spoke and everything, it was just so marvelous. The whole assembly was just wrapped up in a beautiful bow. And I thought, this is for me. This is what I want. And after the assembly, I was just full of information. I went back to work, and you walk into the studio that morning, and everybody's getting makeup and hair and everything, and it's busy and coffee and da-da-da-da. Where'd you go? I went to Paris. Where'd you go? I went to Santa Fe. Blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. Da-da-da-da-da. Teresa, what did you do? I went to the International Assembly of Jehovah's Witnesses. Quiet, everybody. Well, Trees, see you later, kid. We're on the way out. The whole room cleared. And I didn't know why. You know, I didn't know I was like Brother Swartz, Frank Swartz, whom I studied with. He said, when you first start learning and you come in the truth, you need to be locked up because you're crazy. So I was in the crazy stage. And I was telling everybody, Dave, I could corner David Niven, and I wouldn't let him out. I said, you have to hear what I learned. This and that and that and that. And God's grand blessings here at hand. And why it's wise to examine your religion. And why are we rolling die? And this is who God is. And where are the dead? That's all before I could go. 5 chapters. And I told him everything about the assembly, and he was very nice. He listened very nicely. He says, oh, dear, I'm just an old Lutheran, and I'm too old to change. But he would always listen to me. I told everybody they started avoiding me. And I'd go to work, and everybody crossed the street, you know, the lot, and I didn't know what was. I was looking around, wondering what was wrong. And I didn't know the stigma. You see people turn away from you when you say Jehovah. And I just spread good news all over the place. They passed out tracts, and I spread them all around. And lost a whole lot of friends. So-called friends. But I didn't care, because I was having a good time, and I was excited. I tried to pray again to Jehovah and tell him how happy I was and how I wanted to be a part of his people and how I wanted to be friendly and warm and kind like the people I'd met and everything, and to teach me to be that way and to love the way he loves. And when I got home from London, boy, I was ready. I came back home, and Peggy said, keep studying. I said, I've been studying. And she says, how did you do? And I told her everything. I was a little bit depressed, because while I was over there, Satan threw something at me and kind of knocked me sideways. I came home, and Peggy started encouraging me to go to the book study again. I'd lost it a little bit. I'd fallen in love, and I was going to marry a lord. I was going to be lady somebody. He had a moat and a castle and everything. And so I said, well, I can study Jehovah, you know, over in London, and I can give up my citizenship and everything. I didn't realize then it was a little trap, but I'm here and he's over there now. So I came back, and she says, come on, go to the bookstore. I said, I don't want to go. I got on jeans. She says, come on, you got, just go. We have a brother who just started to pioneer, and he's just starting on our book study, and you'll enjoy it. Come on. So I said, okay. I went and sat on the floor, and I listened to Frank Swartz conduct that. You were in the Theocracy book toward the end of it, and I really liked him right away because he reminded me of Robin. And Peggy heard me say in an undertone, I like the way he teaches. And that night, she arranged for Frank and Annette Swartz, Frank, who had just started to pioneer, to call on me. She asked me, was it all right? And I said, she says, oh, they're very good. You love them and everything. Because she was going back to work. And at that time, I said, well, I want to study. After that book study, I want to study every day. So Anne came to the door. I said, fine. The next day, she came to the door. And Frank is standing way in the back, off to the side by the car. She says, Teresa, they were just like Robin and Una, only American style. She says, is it all right if Frank comes in and studies with us? So I go, come on in, Frank! So he comes in, and we started studying, and we studied for hours. I studied 4 and 5 hours. I studied every day. I wanted to learn everything. Frank started turning his time. He said, the brother's asking, well, Frank, how you doing on your pioneering? Getting your time in? He says, yeah. He says, 95 hours I spent at Teresa's house. And they taught me how to really love Jehovah and how to be the kind of person, still trying, that he loves and approves of. And they helped me through so many different things and encouraged me all the while. Peggy all the time, keep studying. And I did that. Meanwhile, I had done a pilot for the oldest movie, Dracula, of course, comes out 3 years later, and my whole life's changed by then, and here I am with fangs biting people. And but I did that before I knew any better. I had also done a pilot for a show called Get Christy Love. And when I came back, I studied, and after a period of time, I got baptized in January 1974. In April, I got a call and said, you owe us. You're under contract to do this series. Well, ordinarily, when you do a pilot, you put your name on there and you make sure they can't get anybody else, because if it sells, you want, you know, to do the part. Well, I told them I didn't want to do it. Well, they thought I was nuts. And so I explained to them that during the medium of the pilot, I had become one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and if they wanted to embark upon the series on the same platform and the basis of the pilot, that I wouldn't be able to do it with the violence and the crime and all the things that would be distasteful to me now as a Christian. So I went into negotiations with David Wolper, who was marvelous. He had a big conference, and he even went so far as to call the society to find out all he could about Jehovah's Witnesses. Found out that there's a brother on the undercover narcotics squad in New York. And he said, well, yeah, you can be a cop. So then he says, I asked the people, the gentleman at Bethel, whether or not the brother carried a gun. And he says, yes, he does. Does he ever kill anybody? So he says, the brother never fires his gun unless his life is threatened first. And even in the event of firing, he never shoots to kill. So that's why Christy Love carried a gun, and that's why she defended herself only when she was attacked first. But if you notice, she never killed anybody in the whole series, and she never lied.
I'd like to say something for that brother.
Yeah.
He's never killed anybody. Yeah. He did shoot somebody before he came into the truth, but it was somebody who was trying to shoot him, and he got him. But he didn't kill him.
No.
Just in fairness to the brother. Right. Go ahead.
Christy Love never lied on the show. In fact, everybody else around her lied. So she always told the truth, so when she told the truth, they just assumed she was lying. Just to show you the letter, which is unheard of in business, in the entertainment business, the letter from David Wolper Productions. It says, Dear Teresa, Larry, Paul, these are the producers, and I would like to thank you for yesterday's meeting. We felt it was very productive, and we want to assure you that we will carefully observe the following. One, I talked so much, I thought they were going to throw me out, and they agreed to everything. There will be no obscenity or obscene speech in the body of the teleplay. There will be signs posted to warn performers and crew members that we will not abide obscenity or excessive language on the set. There was no cursing or smoking on our set. Two, there will be no use of unnecessary sensationalism. Three, emotional interest where your character is concerned or involved will be only for the highest moral character, and there will be no sexual involvements whatsoever. Four, there will be no stories about spiritualism, no stories on the occult, nor stories that have religious characters as their motif. Five, there will be no use of excessive violence. Here I would like to point out that we are in total agreement with the network, and as we all collectively frown on the excessive violence, you can be more than certain there will be none. Six, the end product will be considered for the positive force and positive effect that it could have on viewers, and that is the aiding of the needy and downtrodden, the moral lesson that crime does not pay and evildoers suffer. Seven, there will be no taking of the Lord's name in vain, none of that oh my God stuff. Moreover, there will be any impieties used in the teleplay. Eight, the shows will not be sex-oriented. Nine, there will be no use of homosexuality or lesbianism. 10, there will be no portrayal of politics as the main theme of the teleplay. We will be most sensitive and careful to observe your spiritual awareness regarding patriotism. 11, you will be given time off to attend Bible studies. I had 2 days a week that I left at 5 o'clock. I didn't care what was going on to go to the meeting. 12, you will not be asked to perform a blood transfusion, nor will be... 13, you will not be asked to kill a person. In addition, I am sure you are aware that we are most sensitive to your needs, and we would never ask you to perform in a manner which is unbefitting to your high moral or spiritual character. I'm looking forward to a happy and successful relationship. Sincerely, David Wolper Productions. So I got all those things in writing so that in the event, during the course of time, anybody forgot what was said, the old paper came out. We had the 2 days off during the week for our Bible studies. In fact, they started to go crazy. The crew was great. There was no smoking or cursing on our set. And all over the Universal lot, people would come over just to see what was going on over there. And they would walk in and they would say, "Well, she doesn't allow you to smoke, man. You can't even curse if you don't want to." And the crew says, "Yeah, we like it. We have a lady here and you respect it or get off our set." The crew was really great. Before we go to shoot the movie, we in our trailer had a little trailer right with me. She was working as a stand-in, and every morning we'd have the text, we'd have prayer before we'd go out into the world, and everybody knew about it on the whole lot. And it'd be 8:05. We'd do it 8:00, and somebody said, "Well, where's Teresa?" And I said, "Well, they're having text and prayer. She'll be here in a minute." The crew. And they got so good that when people would come up and ask for autographs, I don't sign autographs, but I'll sign a scripture and then sign it Jehovah's Witnesses, only if they promise to read it. So the crew got so good at why we don't engage in creature worship that people would come up and ask for an autograph, and anybody, the light man, the cameraman, would say, "Well, now listen, Jehovah doesn't want us to, really, they could explain it better than we could. We just stand back and look." We had the privilege of placing so many books and so many magazines, and every producer and director that came on that show, every performer got some literature. And I guess we placed some 200 books, I don't know, more than that. And many people have, since then, have we heard, have started Bible studies. One little girl that came to us in the trailer, we got her going and turned her over to her sister in Hollywood. She just got baptized about 3 months ago. And her name was Brenda Gooch. She's in the business, too. She was offered a fabulous singing contract, which she turned down for Jehovah. And just incredible experiences. We had the privilege of, again, as I said, going to our studies on two nights a week. It got so that on Tuesday and Wednesday, the crew would say, "Don't you have a meeting on Friday night?" Because they wanted to get out early. When I go, they go. So they would be watching their watches about 5:55, you know, they knew they were going to get out of there. One day the producer got so crazy, they had about one shot to do, and it was almost 5:00. It would take them about 5 minutes, and if they had to wait till the next day, it would cost them some $10,000, $20,000. And I was, you know, he's just talking, and I was taking everything off and getting ready to go home, and he says, "Well, wait a minute, let's make a deal. Get the congregation, we'll send a bus, have them come to the studio, we'll have the meeting here." I said, "You can't do that." He wanted to bring the whole congregation to the studio. I said, "Nope, I gotta go." And like I said, I'm gonna make you honest. See, you said 5:00, and I'm leaving at 5:00. We had a reputation around the studio, and we were very proud of it. I was very proud of it. Of course, the show wasn't the way we would have done it had all of Jehovah's people been involved in it. But as much control as we had, I was happy for that. What else? What did I forget, Tina?
No. Well, you're not doing the show anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah, we stopped doing the show because about midway through the show, we changed writers and producers, and they came in with new ideas, and this paper didn't mean anything to them because Mr. Walper had transacted his business with Universal, and ABC had control.
So now it was their turn to dictate, and they weren't going to be dictated to by some little girl. And we started getting hit on and start changing a little bit, and I just said, I can't go home with a good conscience after doing this show, and we don't have a 9-to-5 type worship. Our worship is a way of life, and everything we do is affected, and even though it's a part, I wouldn't play a part that I wouldn't do as Teresa Graves in real life as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and that's my criteria, whether or not the brothers can watch it. Now, I know to do that, the brothers can't watch that. And if the brothers didn't watch it, then I shouldn't be doing it. And they didn't really want to go along with that. Jehovah taking care of me. Have worked in a whole year, but because things have come in, but undesirable. And of course, I'm in Hollywood, I'm crazy, because I haven't done this and I haven't done that. But of course, the most important thing is to serve Jehovah. And like I said, I haven't gone without. I've never been happier in my whole life. And I've never been so full of joy and contentment. And I've never had so many wonderful experiences as traveling around and sharing in this work. I've never stayed in the home of the Witnesses before, and every place I've been on this trip, I've had the privilege of staying in the homes. And I tell you, I'd heard about it, but I'd never experienced the hospitality. And Brother Dellinger and his wife got out of their bed, and I said, "Well, I'm sleeping in their bedroom, and the house is ours." And everywhere we go, you know, it's like that, and it's a family, and you can't find that anywhere in the world. You cannot. And I've traveled a great deal, and I know a lot of people. It's not the same. We are. Listen, there are over 4 billion people in this world, and Jehovah chose us. This was a letter that was written to a brother in Malawi by a German sister who had been in the Nazi concentration camps. Brother Henry Good gave me these two letters. He couldn't let me know who the parties were, how the letter got out of Malawi or anything, but he did say I could copy them. The German sister's letter to the brother in Malawi for the purposes of encouraging him. "Dear brother, this was exactly the case in Paul's day when he was imprisoned, wasn't it? He said it became public knowledge in association with Christ among all the Praetorian Guard and all the rest, and most all the brothers in the Lord, feeling confident by reason of my prison bonds, are showing all the more courage to speak the word of God fearlessly. We're hoping that all this publicizing will make Banda back down a little. But of course, it is not in man we're putting our trust, but in Jehovah's power. And as Paul points out in 2 Corinthians 1, 8 through 11, our prayers in their behalf do help. And it is an encouragement to us to know that the brothers there are remaining strong-hearted. Additionally, we here at headquarters are closely watching with great interest the trend the leaders are taking toward religion. Even though serious and momentous days lie ahead for us all, there is every reason for us as Christians to have implicit confidence in Jehovah, the God of salvation. Again, we express our gratefulness for your great demonstration of love. Just as you have exerted such generosity and loving kindness, so likewise Jehovah will fill you up with all the things he has promised to those who show the spirit you have. Just as stated by Paul in Philippians 4, 18 and 19. May Jehovah continue to bless your works of love and keep you under his mighty wing of protection. Psalm 91, 1 and 2. And here's the answer from our brother in Malawi. "Dear sister, I thank you very much for your letter, and I am grateful to have this for the first time from Germany. I am glad for your encouraging way. I have received your comfort with hopefulness, because certainly Jehovah has brought us back to our homeland for reasons. I agree with you. I am not commenting on all you have written, but I just want you to know that although persecution is growing greater and greater, we shall stand for Jehovah forever. As you have reminded me of the olden days, yes, we have good reason to trust in Jehovah because we have pictures to look at. So we know how Jehovah served his people, and it is the same God whom we are serving. So we know he will do the same as he did in the past. The condition seemed to be good when, after being attacked by the Youth League gangsters, we could go to the police and the police give the brothers bail bonds so that the brothers could stay. But now this has changed. Instead, now they are taken to the prison. I don't know what happens to them there. I will let you know when I find out, because I am still in my hiding place. Some brothers tried to flee to other countries, but the Malawi authorities asked the other brothers, the other countries, not to receive them, but to send them back for persecuting. So you can see that we now have reached a panic state. Another thing, they take a husband and a wife, and leave only the children without anybody to care for them. While on the other hand, we have no food or money, and we can't even support our children. So now we have nowhere to go, nothing to do,
no house, and we're hungry. But as I can see, many of us are still not wavering. We hope and trust in Jehovah, and we shall forever. At last, don't forget my loving greetings to you and all the brothers and sisters.
Well, it certainly has been a real comfort to all of us to be together, to share these experiences, to share this tremendous witness that's being given by our brothers in Malawi. And we're all deeply moved to do what we can in order to help. We can't overemphasize the writing of letters to the government. It costs about 25 cents for a political party card in Malawi. Are you brothers willing to spend 31 cents to send a letter in behalf of our brothers to help them?